Israel is a land of diverse cultures, religions, foods, music, and people. Join Benji Shulman for the next hour as he explores the devout and divine, the off the wall and outrageous, and everything in between. Right here on 101.9 High FM.
101.9 High FM. Talking today to Gabby Blumberg and Jordi Sank, who are Jewish filmmakers in our community and working, interestingly, also on Jewish-related films. Guys, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being with us on the New Blue Review.
Thanks for having us.
Awesome to have you guys in studio today. So let's just start off with your first film that you guys have been working on. It's about the Holocaust and a Holocaust survivor. Tell us a little bit about that and why did you decide to do it?
Sure. So I grew up in Cape Town, and I grew up around the Holocaust survivor. Her name's Ella Blumenthal, and she's 98 today. And so I grew up hearing her incredible stories of survival, moments of hope that she experienced during her time in the different camps and in the Warsaw ghetto. And like from that moment as a child hearing these stories, I always knew that we had to capture them and preserve them. And basically, the beginning of last year, Gabby and I met and we planned to shoot it all. And right now we're in post-production on the documentary, which focuses mainly on the historical side of her experiences and her memories, but also something that we haven't really seen too much, which is also how Holocaust survivors today are living, and how she sort of lives her life with such zest and incredible perseverance.
And I think that it was really a great privilege for me because, as Jordi mentioned, he grew up with Ella and he knew her story and he knew her personality. And at the beginning of last year, he asked me to come on board and help produce the project. And I really didn't know what I was getting myself into. I thought, this is an important story to tell. Of course, I heard the facts. She grew up in Warsaw. She was in hiding in Warsaw. She survived 3 concentration camps. So I knew the fact of how amazing and rich her story was. But only when I got on set and met her did I actually realize the privilege I had of being in her presence. And it's something that I think that the film gives the audience that privilege too, because she is such a, I want to say, she can be a bit of a sassy grandmother. She has such a personality. And I think it's really, it's always amazing, meeting a Holocaust survivor who still has this strength. But with her, she has a zest for life. She has a sense of humor. And she's got such a strong faith, which I think is quite rare and really important to see.
And she's, what, 99 today?
She's 98. She'll turn 99 in August.
Okay, yeah. So, sure, that's it's not young at all.
Yeah, but she's young at heart.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I went and had a look at the Instagram page for the filming, and you have some quite interesting images still of her walking down the beach in Cape Town and talking to the residents. So is that kind of part of what you were trying to get across?
Yes, so that's one element. We really wanted to get across her incredible nature, her fight for survival, but also this like incredible spirit that she has, which is like almost infectious, and it sort of inspires all of us who, like, we all have our own daily troubles, nothing to compare to what she went through, but like still she's smiling, she's happier than ever,
And you can also imagine we really wanted to show that strength, and we knew that Ella likes to swim. So we thought, oh, cinematic, how perfect, we can get this shot of her in the swimming pool. But also, she's 98, we don't want to tire her out. So Jordi says, Ella, get in the swimming pool, you're going to do one length, we're going to set up the camera, and then we're going to change the camera, and you'll have a break, and we'll tell you when to do it again. She says, nonsense. She gets in the pool before the camera's even rolling. She's doing 10 laps in this long swimming pool, and we like chasing after her. And I think that's actually what a lot of the shoot was running after Ella, because she's so strong, and she's got that strength, that will to survive that you really needed during the darkest time. She's still able to have that in fun and great moments today.
I'm also interested that you decided on a technique which was kind of pioneered by Israeli filmmakers a few years ago in Waltz with Bashir, which basically does memory shots or things that in the past using animation. Yes. So what aspects of that have you tried to incorporate into the film? Because it's quite interesting for me. You know, South African documentaries are very good on this realism stuff, what you're doing with people swimming and in Cape Town and walking. But the animation is something new and very Israeli. So just talk to us a little bit about the process behind that.
So the reason that we wanted to go to use animation was because we took a look at all the different options of stock that we had. And there is quite a bit of the camps mostly taken after the liberation. And we just felt like, you know, Ella's put into a gas chamber. And to show an image of a gas chamber or video footage of a gas chamber really doesn't even begin to describe her story and the way that she felt in the gas chamber. So that's the reason that we wanted to bring animation in is because you sort of relive these moments with her and you experience it with her character, like, you know, from the beginning of her story to the end. Also, we wanted to, I think, with animation, I think animation's usually geared at a younger audience, and I think now is more relevant than ever to gear Holocaust survivor stories to younger audiences who might not get the opportunity to ever meet a Holocaust survivor because they really are far and few between.
And I think that the other thing that animation really contributes to this film is magic, because you know, Ella went through such a horrific time, but as human nature, you needed to imagine a few things to survive and to escape the reality. Can I give away the Shabbos table story? Yeah, so little sneak peek into the film. She's watching someone being hanged who has tried to escape one of the camps, and her niece who survived with her starts describing a Shabbos meal, and she describes the bread that they would be eating and the food that would be on the table and how that was such a transformative experience that made them sort of fly out of the camps in their imagination and survive that time. And that is something that animation can do for us, and something that will, I think, really allow the audience to get into the heads of these survivors and see really what they were thinking and what helped them survive.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. If you want to be part of the conversation, ask Gabby or Jordi anything. You can telegram us on 061-895-1019, or you can SMS us on 34519. It only costs you R1.50 just to engage on the show. We'll take a short break. We'll be back just after this.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM, talking film in the Jewish community today with Gabi Bloomberg and Jordi Senk about their film, well, the first one that we're going to talk about anyway, about a Holocaust survivor living in Cape Town. Now, guys, I'm sure that, you know, it is very, you know, from what you described, a great experience to be working with a person such as this. But I was interested, you know, Mod Perlov, who also had a film recently made about his life in the Russian Gulag. He died last week. You could tell in the article that I read in the Jewish Report that sometimes there's age differences, there's perspectives on the world that are different, and that can, in a filming project, I'm sure, get in the way, but cause some kind of tension. Were there any of those kind of issues working with someone who's 98 and with you guys who are actually millennials, unlike me?
I think that it more was a learning experience for us, seeing what values she has kept and what we can incorporate into our lives. And I think what was also interesting is in terms of its relevance, and of course, as we're saying, we're sitting here today quite by coincidence on the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, where she was liberated actually from Bergen-Belsen, but she did spend time in Auschwitz. But how this film is still relevant today, and that was quite interesting in the conversations that we had with her. She spoke a lot about, and I think this is why the film is not only relevant to the Jewish community, but she spoke about the beginnings of the war and the hate and the discourse and the way that people were being positioned and spoken about, and Jews and other groups being represented. And she says that she sees that sort of mushrooming up again today in different parts of the world. And I think really that was, that brings the film, I think, its relevance today, especially in this, in xenophobic South Africa and in a, and in a world that is being run by fear and fear politics.
So is, you know, is that, when I say the, is that the idea of the film? I mean, are you guys going out there to create a film that you're going to have on at film festivals and circuits, or is it something that you expect to be seen in schools and Holocaust centers for educational purposes? Where are you pitching the angle of the film, so to speak?
So I think the film, we're pitching it at both. Mm-hmm. So I think we last year we had the opportunity to go to the Durban International Film Festival, which is the only Oscar qualifying film festival in Africa, and we got to meet with different people from the various festivals around the world, and we got to like speak to them a little bit about the film, and they gave us a lot of great advice. So I think foremost we'd love for the film to have an international release at the festivals, and then also we want to try and target the schools, different Holocaust centers around the world, and then also just to get it to the widest audience, hopefully on a streaming platform where anyone who sees an image or a trailer of it might be interested and want to just take a look.
Well, yeah, you've actually just answered the question of someone who SMS'd in just saying, "Hi, Jordy and Gabby, this sounds amazing. What platform will we be able to see the movie on and when?" Okay, so you've kind of answered that person. Thank you for sending this SMS. Please do add your name. We would love to know who you are who's going to be watching the film. But we do appreciate that you sent that in. Okay, so when can we expect to be seeing it on the screens?
So for that, you're going to have to stay up to date at the moment on our social media, which is at Sanctuary Films, SANKTUA.
Yeah, because there's another Sanctuary Films with a C, so you're going to not...
Like Geordie Sank.
Yeah.
Because as Geordie was explaining, the way that a film works is you send it to festivals and it hopefully will have a positive festival run. As Jordy's mentioned, we've been speaking to some big film festivals globally who know that the film's happening and are quite interested in it. So we aim to finish this post-production phase, which is doing the animation, the sound design, the color grade, the everything that goes into packaging the film and exporting it in the correct resolutions and specs, and doing that by the end of July, August this year. Then hopefully it will have a festival run. Unfortunately, what happens is while it's at a film festival, you cannot release it in the public sphere because obviously the festivals lack the exclusivity. So that will happen, I suppose, the beginning part of next year. And from there, depending how well it's done on festival, it then gets attracted to distributors who will do theatrical releases. But as Geordie said, really our main aim, and it will only happen next year, is to get this to the widest audience possible. And that will be through partnering with educational platforms. We've had the privilege of working with Tully Nace from the Holocaust and Genocide Center, so we'd really love to screen it at places like that, and at different schools, and really not, we've been meeting actually with the Polish embassy, we're meeting next week with the German embassy, hopefully, and really getting this out to people that aren't just Jewish through educational programs too, but hopefully we will have that festival and theatrical release first.
Now, whenever you speak to filmmakers in South Africa, and we've had a few on the show in the last while, funding always comes up as a huge issue, right? Now, it doesn't sound to me like you had a massive cost for this particular a movie, because it's kind of a one-person story, but if you're adding animation, that kind of thing, that's a time-consuming, if nothing else, process. So were you able to get financial backing for a film such as this, which is, I mean, it's kind of got a niche story, even if it has a wider audience?
So, yeah, the animation I think has been the most expensive part of the process. But basically, we've had a financial backer to help us complete the animation, most of the post production. But we are looking for additional funding. We've been applying to a whole bunch of foundations and funding platforms around the world. So we're hoping to sort of complete the project, the remaining funding for the project. Which is most of post, a few bit of post production, like the sound design, the color grading, etc.
I mean, the other thing that filmmakers moan about is that as South African filmmakers, it's not till you make it somewhere else, right? You can win the Paraguay Film Festival Award, and then suddenly South Africans are interested. So the story itself, when you're at the Durban Film Festival, are locals interested in a Holocaust story? Is that something that South Africans resonate with?
So I think what was very interesting is, you know, speaking to different filmmakers and audience members, is that her film ultimately, I mean, her story is ultimately really one of resilience and survival and hope. She is currently living in Cape Town, so it does have that South African appeal. But what we found very interesting is we did a test screening with filmmakers and non-filmmakers. And do you want to tell the story of them?
So at the test screening, one of the filmmakers that we sort of brought in to give an opinion, he absolutely loved the film, and he thought it was so relevant. He's a black male who grew up in Cape Town, and he had no exposure whatsoever to the Holocaust or any stories or information of it. And he said it was a very informative screening for him, but also he saw a lot of parallels between what his parents and what he went through, you know, happening in South Africa during apartheid. And he said that seeing someone like Ella, who's been through the darkest period in history, and to see her like being so positive and to being so strong, really was just uplifting for him. And he believes that a lot of South Africans will benefit from it. And quite funny, the next day I was actually meeting Ella, and he insisted on coming to meet her with me, and he even brought her a little scarf as a gift, which was really sweet of him.
That's beautiful, actually. We're speaking to Gabby and Jordy today about their filmmaking. If you want to ask any questions, you can telegram 0618951019, or you can SMS us on 34519. I want to ask something about your experience inside the Jewish community, right? And as being filmmaker, if you're not a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, we always get a bit concerned there might be a problem. So is filmmaking big in the Jewish community? Are there people, students, young people who are getting engaged with this stuff, making films? Where are we as a community? And crucially also being able to tell community stories as well.
So I think what I've found in my experience is, well, firstly about the lawyer, everything. I mean, Hollywood's made up of Jewish people. Right. But I think...
mostly Jewish entertainment lawyers.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But I think there are definitely Jews in film school, and there are definitely Jewish people creating content, whether it is documentary or fiction, or whether it's more experimental work. I think what becomes more difficult is if you are an observant Jew trying to get into a more formalized film industry, whether that is, say, commercials or being on a soap opera set. The film world works where it's 6-day weeks, 12-hour days. So I have experience of working on set and having to leave at 4 o'clock on a Friday, and I was leaving set 6 hours early, which is unimaginable in a job, leaving 6 hours early. So I think trying to get into that space, or a commercial, you might be shooting the whole of Saturday. So trying to get into that space is quite difficult. And that's why a lot of observant Jews will go more into a freelancing space or hustling by themselves. Or a lot of people who don't keep Shabbos only then start keeping Shabbos at a later stage in their careers, when they've already built up a name for themselves and can call the shots. So I do think that it is an active and vibrant community. I think that the, you know, the biggest stumbling block, if you do want to be in a more institution, would be if you are observant. But I think that there's, as we can see from the films that we're creating, a lot of opportunities with, being a Jew.
I think also there's a lot of, one thing that I've realized over the past few years is that there are a lot of industry leaders who, like, you know, in commercials and in film in South Africa, that are Jewish, that are running studios, that are running big production companies. And, you know, it's all about finding who the best people to collaborate with are, because in my experience, like, there's been a few people who've been really, really accommodating as far as Shabbos is concerned, kosher, and I think for Orthodox filmmakers, I think it's easy. You just got to find the right partners.
And what about the issues of stories themselves, right? So it's amazing to me that you found the story, which clearly does resonate and will resonate, but often, particularly on the documentary track. I mean, you don't have an Encounters Film Festival without like a virulently anti-Israel film, and you know, film film schools are particularly prone to very sort of woke narratives. You guys might be Jewish, but you're also white. You know, how do you find that interaction in the work that you're doing?
So I actually had a very clear experience of that 2 years ago. I was doing my master's in directing. I was studying in London at the Met Film School, and a producer who's ex-South African from Durban, her name's Anika Makista, and she wanted to produce a documentary about indentured labour in Durban and in South Africa, and she asked me to come on board and direct. And we had quite a lot of conversations about it at the time, because we're telling a story of indentured labour, of Indian people from India coming to Durban, and we looked at it on a global scale and realised that, you know, a lot of Indian people who came to Durban through interviews felt quite strongly South African. And I think there's a lot of there were a lot of dynamics coming into that film because of apartheid happened. And so a lot of racial, it's difficult to be in South Africa without knowing how you define yourself. And but I think what was interesting about being part of that film as a white South African was also having the Jewish heritage, because I could understand what it was like to leave a place for want of a better life. I could understand historically what it's like to be oppressed in some way or to be tricked in some way. And I think that on that level, as Jewish people, because of our history, we really can relate to a lot of stories of struggle and of trauma, which is typical to the South African landscape.
Very interesting. Okay, so just to finish off on Ella and her film. So if people do want to follow it, where can they? It's just on the Instagram, or are there any others?
Right now, it's just on the Instagram, but there is a website that is in development. But we'll get back to you, I think, with more information on that once it's out.
Okay. And there's the IMDb page that has been set up. So you can follow that, and release dates, etc. will be on there.
Yeah, no, it's legit if it's on IMDb. That's the ruining, right? We're talking today to Gabi Blomberg and Jordi Sank. They are filmmakers involved with a variety of filmmakers.